Excuse me, I'm leaving at 12.
Okay, today is the 12th of December, 2019. That's 14th of Kislev Tufshin Pei, up to Musar Day of Perek Vav. So the truth is, as I was finishing up, I remembered, oh yeah, I have an entire book on the Shema. Rabbi Lam, Norman Lam, wrote a sefer called The Shema, which has all the different understandings of the first pasuk. Actually, I brought it, but I left it in the other room. But it was already after I had come up with a couple of things to say before I realized I had it, but I forgot. Sorry, I realized that the book existed. I forgot that I had it. And then I remember, oh, yeah, I think I bought it at some point, and then was able to find it. All right, so anyways, so the Parsha has in here the Shema. So the Shema is, I guess, the focal point of the Parak. There is obviously much to say about that. But I just wanted to, I didn't want to get too in the weeds, but two ideas from the Rav, two ideas from Rav Soloveitchik. So number one is that, as we described the other day in the Ramban's description, that there's a mitzvah to say Shema daily. The mitzvah that is being described by Shema is that of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The mitzvah it's the principle of faith. We have a mitzvah to say it twice a day, which is pronounced later on in the parsha, where it says, you know, you're going to say it when you go to sleep and when you wake up. But the mitzvah that is being, right, it's a recollection of the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So the Rav in the book Family Redeemed, so it has an essay entitled Marriage, and part of the, he says, so even after the marriage takes place, marriage comes about as a person feels some type of loneliness, they feel that they're not feeling all that they should, but even after they've achieved that, so they're still missing something. And what are they missing? So describe that they are missing the creativity, the creation of man. Once they've created a child, so then this loneliness that the Rav describes begins going away. And how is our we don't have very much about the relationship between parents and children, other than this parsha. In this parsha, there is the description, there is the command of Dibart Avam, that you're going to teach. What? You're going to teach them Torah. I just want to say the exact words, which wasn't on the tip of my tongue. So you're going to go ahead and teach it to your children. So first of all, the Rambam in the very beginning of Hilchos Kriya Shema, so he describes this as being the importance of it. There's a mitzvah to say Shema every morning and every night, and this is the Yesod Emunah. That's not exact the language, but there is the principles of faith, which is one giving over. So Rambam points out that the only way that it can really be defined, that one could really be in fulfillment of the principle of faith, is not just to keep it to yourself, but also to then teach it on to one's children. And that's part of the creativity that a person has with regards to their children, not just the creation of the entity, but also the teaching to them. And he contrasts it with the Socratic method. And then he compares on and says that, and the same thing would be with a Rebbe and a Talmud as well. That's why a Rebbe could be considered to be like a parent, and many of the halachos correspond to one another. In some ways, the honor due to a Rebbe is more than honor due to a parent, because the Rebbe is creating as well. And as opposed to the Socratic method, where everything is really, teaching is really just about bringing things out from their recollection. I mean, that's the Socratic method, that everything comes about through asking questions. Right? The teacher is going to say and ask questions, and the students, so what does that imply? That implies that the student already knows anything, you just need a quality teacher in order to bring it out. So we reject that. We regard teaching as also teaching, giving over new knowledge and bringing about the creation of that person. He concludes by here talking about that. Therefore, it's not like a person adopts a child. So there is such an idea. If you're not able, one is not able to have children, if they are, so they should perhaps can adopt children and get much of the merits of. Why is that? Because you're producing, you're creating. Creating is not just about creating the biological entity, but also creating the spiritual entity. So that is he plays off of this pasuk of Vayu Vishinantim Levenech Vidbartabam, that is actually part of the integral part. Integral part of Emunah, in that we are acting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in developing this world and developing children and developing the next generation. Fine. Another interesting thing pointed at here is the following medrash. There is a medrash in Parshas Bo. It's Shmos Yutes Beis. So in Bo it says, it asks, "Yilivi tamim b'chukecha," that the pasuk says that my heart should be perfect with your decrees. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. So zechuk. So what does it mean, chukecha? Chukecha, your decrees. What are your decrees? So the Medrash says, "Zos chukas haPesach v'chukas paraduma." This is talking about the chok of Pesach and the chok of paraduma. What does that mean? So by paraduma, it's zos chukas haTorah. That's obviously known as the chok. But we actually, the same pasuk appears by the Korban Pesach. Zos chukas haPesach says zos chukas haPesach in Shmos, and also zos chukas haTorah in Bamidbar. Fine. So both of them are described as chukim. Okay. The Gemara then asks, "V'yata yodea ezo chuka gedola mizu." Now they're both called chokes, but how do we know, or we don't know, which one is greater than the other? Right? You have the chok of paraduma, and the chok, what does that have to do with our parak? So we'll get to that soon. But you have the chok of paraduma, and you have the chok of Pesach. Mish Medrash asks, which one is greater? Why is paraduma greater?
That's considered the classic folk, right?
Well, that's... okay.
That's the one that my mouth never understood. That.
Okay, okay, fine. But why does that make it greater, though?
More hidden.
It's more hidden. I mean, the Chorav Pesach come up with an idea, that one we can't. Okay, fine. So he says, you happen to be right according to the Medrash. The Medrash says, but not for that reason. He says, I'll give you a mashal. You have two women that are walking down the street together. So nira shavos. So when they're walking together, they look to be equal in status. Migdol mizu. So how do you know which one is greater than the other one? He says, "Osa shechaver to melava osa ad beisav olechas achareha." He says, "The one who the companion walks to the house and walks behind when they walk into the house. So the one who's in charge walks first, and the one who is the companion, the one who is like her maidservant, walks behind her." So kach bePesach. So what does that have to do with us? He says, "So too by Pesach. By Pesach it says chok, and by Parah it also says chok." It says umigadol, which one is greater? Hapara, why? Sheochle Pesach tzrichin la, because the Korban Pesach needs the para aduma. Why does the Korban Pesach need the para aduma? To purify people, right? Plus people are tamei. The only way they can get around to eating the Korban Pesach is if they first have the para aduma. So the para aduma, shenemar, it says v'achula tamei miyafars v'yafasach atas. That they're going to take the tamei person and they'll give him some of the ashes from the chatas, from the paraduma, and that's the only way that he'll come around to be able to eat from the Korban Pesach. So what's he saying? That he's saying the Korban, the paraduma is considered greater, so to speak, than the Korban Pesach, because the paraduma is necessary for the Korban Pesach to happen, but the Korban Pesach isn't necessary for the Korban Pesach, for the paraduma to happen. Okay? Good so far? Bruce is like, who cares?
No, that's not that. Who cares?
I understand. No, that's okay. It's legitimate.
Why do they pick out the Korban? I mean, there are so many things are considered a chok.
Well, it's the same word. Well, the Torah calls it a chok.
That's the only two times?
It's not the only two times. There's one or two. I don't know how often chok appears in. It's not many that the Torah calls something a chok. Another example is Hechsher Kalim. Kasher and Kalim is also called a chok.
Right.
Okay. All right, but anyways, you have this medrash here. Which one is greater? Say paraduma is greater because the Korban Pesach couldn't happen without the paraduma. So what does that do for me? So there is an essay in the Reflections of the Rav. I knew about this one. I knew about the essay in the Reflection of the Rav. I looked today just in the Art Scroll Medrash here, and actually there's an insight at the bottom which they quote from the Rav, which is not a collector's item. The amount of times that Art Scroll quotes something from Rav Soloveitchik has a big box on the bottom where he summarizes this 8-page essay from the Rav, and he says, "Oh, I'll tell you. So what in the world is this Medrash talking about? Parah versus Pesach, what's the difference? So he says that if you think about it, there's a dual obligation. Being Jewish people is a, there's two aspects to being a Jewish people. This is sort of a common thing. It actually has been part of the discussion. Donald Trump yesterday signed the executive order declaring anti-Semitism something that colleges have to look out for. I'm not sure exactly what he did. And obviously, if Trump does something, so everybody's got to be critical. So the other side's got to be critical of him.
And Judaism a nation, and therefore you can't discriminate.
Oh, that's what it said.
Yeah.
Ah, so you declared Judaism as a nationality. Ah. So everybody went after him, saying, how dare you declare Judaism a nationality? It's really a religion, right? The only problem is, if you say, oh, well, Judaism is a religion then, so all the non-religious Jews get all upset, so how dare you call it a religion? It's a nationality. My grandfather, was in the Holocaust, right? Which is a legitimate issue, right? So how do you put, so what is it? It's about the same thing, that's part of the challenge in running the state of Israel today, right? Is it a country or is it a religious entity? And who's, and all of the challenges of conversions and marriages and divorces, all that kind of stuff revolve around this question, which really hasn't been resolved. So Soloveitchik says, yeah, plus it's a dichotomy. There really are two aspects to the existence of the Jewish people. There's a responsibility towards mitzvos, there's a responsibility towards nationhood. So then he turns around and says, and that's what this medrash is talking about. The medrash of the parah, the mitzvah of the parah tumah is a personal thing. A person is responsible for their own tumah vitara, and they have to make sure that they're pure if they're going to go in certain places. That the parah tumah represents the ultimate chok in terms of the ultimate responsibility of a person towards making sure his personal life in terms of kedusha is in order. That's what the parah tumah represents. What does the mitzvah of Korban Pesach represent? So that represents the idea of everybody being combined, that we're part of an entity or part of a national system or part of a nation. In fact, that perhaps is the reason why Korban Pesach has to be eaten in groups. Right? Why does a Korban Pesach have to be eaten in groups? But also to recognize this idea that you can't just eat a Korban Pesach by yourself. You have to eat the Korban Pesach with other people to recognize that you are part of the other people. You're part of the rest of the you're part of the rest of the Jewish people. So then suggests the Rav. So the Rav says. So this Medrash asks. So which part is more important? What's more important? Is it more important to be committed in terms of mitzvos? Or is it more important to be committed in terms of being a member of the Jewish people? What?
So from this answer, clearly it's more important.
So he says the parah tumah wins out because the Jewish people, right, will not survive without the mitzvot side. Right, that's what he suggests. The chukim of the red cow and the korban pesach are representative of two levels of Jewish God's authority. The medrash wonders which of these is more important. The medrash answers that one's obligation is to shmir sa mitzvos, to undertake without reservation the perfect observance of God's commandments. Just as the matron takes precedence of her attendant, so too does the pesach take precedence. I guess to the parah tumah. Okay, without a Jewish community, the individual Jew would indeed be hard pressed to survive. Only through membership in such a committee does he achieve the fullest expression of Jewish identity. Yet, the essential relationship is not between a Jew and his fellow, but between Jew and his God. The spiritual unfolding of Jewish history symbolized by the Korban Pesach cannot take place without the individual commitment of those who devote themselves to the disciplined life of the mitzvah observance, who are thereby cleansed and sanctified, and so rendered worthy of redemption. Okay, so that's what this medrash is suggesting, and he says parah tumah takes precedence over the Korban Pesach. What does that have to do with our with this? So at the end, it's not in the article thing, but just to prove that I actually read the essay itself. At the end of the essay itself, he says, and that explains the machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam regarding tefillin. Huh? What's the machlokas? Right? So we've heard of the idea that there's Rabbeinu Tam tefillin.
Sure.
Right. So what is Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? What's the difference between Rashi Tefillin and Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? There are different, the Parshios are in a different order. So how is the Parshios in a different order? So the Gemara tells us, that the Gemara asks, and it seems like it should be an easy way of figuring out how the Parshios should be. It's the Feirush Gemara. The Gemara says, Menachos Taf Lama Dala Amu Beis. Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Sadrun. How do we arrange the Tefillin Parshios? What order should they be? So Kadesh Li VaYakiv Yecha Miyamin, Shema VaYayim Shemo Amismol. That you have on the right side Kadesh and VaYakiv. Sorry, Kadesh and VaYakiv Yecha. Those are the two parshas that appear at the end of Parshas Bo. And then you have Shema and Hayayim Shemoa. They're going to be on the left side. So what does that mean, though? That they're going to be on the left side in which order? So, Vatani Ibcha, but in another brisa, it's sort of the opposite. So, Amar Boy, Lo Kasha, Kami Yimino Shel Korei, Kami Yimino Shel Maniach. He says, yeah, the author of the other brisa was looking at it from the other direction. Mm-hmm. Right? Right to left, left to right, right? So, one's talking about from the perspective of the person wearing it, the other person from the perspective of the person looking at it. Okay? So far, so good. And then the Gemara concludes by saying, Vahakorei Korei Kesidron. And the reader reads it in the correct order. What does it mean, reads it in the correct order? In the order that the parshios that they appear. Okay, so Kadesh Li and Vahayaki Viecha, those appear one after another. Later on, then you get to Devarim. The next you have, in terms of the order of the parshas, you have Shema, and we haven't learned Vahaya yet. Vahaya appears in Parshas Ekev, right? So the order that you read it is Kadesh, Vahayaki Viecha, Shema, Vahayim Shema. Okay, so far so good. That's the way Rashi, and therefore that's the way it's going to appear in your tefillin. Kadesh, Vahaya, Shema, Vahaya. According to Rashi.
In
what?
In both? I mean, it's the same in both?
In both. In the Shel Yad, it reads, in the Shel Yad, it's just one long strip, right? So it's going to read in that order. In the Shel Rosh, that's the way it's going to appear in the apartments, in the compartments. Comes to read a Tam and says, if I were to describe the order of the Parshios, that's the way I would have described it. Kadesh Vahaya Shema Vahaya. But that's not the way the Gemara described it. The Gemara describes it as Kadesh and Vahaya on one side, and on the other side, Shema Vahaya. So Rabbi Yehuda says, it's just flipped the order. It flipped the order to say that on the other side, meaning the left side is going to be Kadesh Vahaya, the boat, and on the other side, it's going to start with Shema and go in and say Vahaya. So Vahaya would appear, the Shema and the Vahaya are split, are switched. That's the difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tzvilin. How can you tell the difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tzvilin for looking at it from the outside?
There's something sticking out.
What's the thing sticking out?
The hairs.
The hairs, good. Why are there hairs in your tefillin? So the hairs in your tefillin, the halach part of the halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai of tefillin, is that the parshios have to be wrapped in saros, have to be wrapped in hair. That's what it says. And what we do is you wrap it and you make a knot and you put them all in. Whatever left over here, when you tie the knot, whatever left over here, you just cut off. The exception is the Parsha of Vehaya. The Parsha of Vehaya, also Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, that hair needs to be seen from the outside. So that's drawn out to the outside, a little bit comes out, and then you cut off the top of that. So you see a little bit of hair coming out of your Shel Rosh. So in the Rashi Tefillin, when the Vehaya is the rightmost Parsha, right, so then the hair is going to come out on the right side of the Shel Rosh. On Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, where the Vahaya is a middle Parsha, it's going to come out in the middle of the Tefillin. Right? So if you take a look at your Tefillin Shel Rosh, you'll see, unless you have Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, you don't have Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, right? No. So unless you have Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, the Saros are going to, your Rashi Tefillin will have the hair coming out from the right side. That's their halachic machlokas. By the way, how do you then read Bahakori Kori Kesidron? If you read it, you would read it in order. So according to Rashi says, yeah, you read in order. You read from right to left. You read in order. What's the problem? Rabbi Tam says, no, that's not what it means. If according to you, Rashi, we wouldn't need that line. It would be obvious. I'll tell you what that line means. It means that when you read them, I mean, when you write them, they have to be written in the order that they appear in the Torah. So even though it's going to be switched in the Tefillin Shel Rosh, in terms of the order, you still write it Shema followed by Vayayim Shemoa. Okay, Tefillin Parshas have to be written in order. That's part of why they're so expensive. You find a mistake in the first Parsha, it messes everything else up. Okay, all right. See you later. So by the way, also Tefillin Shel Yad. If you arrange the time to fill in Shel Yad, you actually also write them in order, even though they appear in the other order. You write Vahaya, sorry, Kadesh and Vahaya, then you go all the way to the left and write Shema, and then you write the Vahayim Shemoa. You leave space for the Vahayim Shemoa. That's how Tefillin and Rabbeinu Tam are written. So says the Rav Soloveitchik, so this machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, perhaps is based on this idea as well. Because the Kadesh Vayakiviyecha, that has to do with Kabbalah's Oma, that has to do with accepting Hashem based on the leaving of Egypt. That's the parsha of Hashem took you out of Egypt, and now you're going to remember it. How are you going to remember it? You're going to put tefillin on your hands. You're going to put tefillin on your head, right? So what does that represent? That represents the idea that he was describing as the collective, the community connection with Hashem. The other side of the tefillin that represents the Shema and Vayayim Shemoah. That's the we do mitzvahs. Hashem told us to do mitzvahs. That represents the Parah Aduma sort of connection with Hashem. So Rabbeinu Tam says they're split. On one side, we're going to go from one side, we're going in order in terms of the communal connection. On the other side, we're going to go in terms of the mitzvah connection. And if he's demonstrating that there's a little bit of a distinction, what would we respond in regards to Rashi? Rashi would say, yeah, it's true in terms of maybe which one is more important, so to speak, but they still both emanate, they still both interact with one another. Our mitzvahs bring us about to a greater sense of community, and our community should bring us to a greater idea of shmiras ha-mitzvahs. And the two work together, and that's how you could then read from, you could still read from right to left, and that perhaps is being brought out by this Gemara. How do we pass? We pass like Rashi, right? I don't think anybody wears only Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. We pass like a Shulchan Aruch, pass like Rashi, and we wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin as a chumrah, as a stringency. But perhaps the ideal is that the two ideas actually get merged together. Okay, one more thought, and that is famous Ramban that we read the other day. The Ramban says, the Pasuk says, Vasisa Yashrava Tov Beinei Hashem. Pasuk Yudches, you have to do what is right and good in the eyes of Hashem. So the Ramban says that they explain this very well, that this is this idea of the Fnimah Shuras Adin, the idea of going beyond the law, and the Kavan is that Hashem told us to keep the mitzvos, and now it says, and also keep all these other things that you could potentially do. And then he says, Ve'ezenyan Godel, this is a big deal. Why? L'fisha'i efshar lahaski b'torah kolan hagos ha'adon u'shchena v'reya v'chomasa. Because it's impossible that the Torah can actually go ahead and mention all of the different possible interactions that people would have with one another. It's impossible for the Torah to be able to put all of that in one, in the Torah. It always struck me how the Ramban writes Eifshar. It's impossible. I don't know how you could like limit the Torah and say it's impossible. But that's the words that the Ramban uses. It's impossible. So therefore, you have all of the. Therefore, the Torah sort of as a catch-all tells us, oh, in all your other interactions, Asisa Yashavat Tov, do what is right and good. So says the Rabbein. Says the Rav. Says Rav Henoch Leibowitz, aha, so what does that then tell you? That all of those other interactions is actually a mitzvah d'oraisa. Right? It's actually a biblical responsibility, a Torah commandment, to go and treat people with respect. And all of these different anhagos, all these different things that we find throughout the Torah about ways people are supposed to interact, those are all biblical responsibilities. And he says, with that, I'll answer this somewhat surprising Gemara that appears in Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells about the relationship between Rebbe and what was the name of the
Roman?
Yeah, the Roman king.
Start with a C.
Antoninus. It's here. So Antoninus used to go and visit Rebbe. They used to learn together. And there was this. And the Gemara tells that there was this cave that went from one person to the other. I mean, Antoninus didn't want anybody to know that he was actually going ahead and visiting Rebbe. So the Gemara says that he used to take this cave so no one would see, but he would take two guards with him. One of them he would kill when he got to Rebbe's place, and the other one he would kill when he got back. And there's a little bit of a discussion as to how could Rebbe allow this, knowing that these people could, oh, there are people that are going to die anyways, whatever it is. But that's what happened. So the So one time he shows up at the house and Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama was sitting there. So Antoninus is like, you know, what is this? what's this guy doing here, right? The deal is that no one else could be present when I'm here. So Rebbe responded by saying, oh, don't worry about it. He's not really a person. And Antoninus starts going, he says, no, he's a malach, implying that he's really a malach. So Tanina says, whoa, 1 second. So he says, tell me if you want, go, I'm at least, says, go to the gate and go tell the guy that's resting there that I want to see him. I mean, the guy who was, he had already killed, right? So go tell the guy that's resting there that I want to see him. So Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama like goes out there and sees the guy is killed. He's like, I don't know, what do I, how do I deal with this here? And he says, if I go in and report that the guy is dead already, so Antoninus is going to say to me, I'm not allowed to do that because that's bringing bad news to Antoninus. And if I run away, that's not covered malchus. So he dove into Hashem and he brought the guy back alive and he brought him back inside. Antoninus is like, all right, cool. You know, you could, it's like, cool, all right. I'm not gonna be so upset with you, Rebbe, but never let this happen again. That's how the Gemara concludes. I still don't want this guy around. So Rav Henoch asks, wait a second. What's this? He can't run away because of Kavod Malchus and he can't bring bad news. Where's this idea of not bringing bad news? Where does that idea come from? Implying that he thought that he could solve the problem by bringing bad news. What can I do? I'm not allowed to. So the Gemara learns out in Maseches Megillah that there's an idea of not bringing bad news from a story with Mordechai and Esther. That when Mordechai, with Hasach, that Mordechai sent Hasach, who we understand was Daniel, sent him to go tell Esther that you need to go and daven and fast, or that we're going to daven and you should go to the king. And Esther sends back, I'm not going to the king. That's the first thing that she sends back. So the pasuk says, "Vayagid lo Mordechai." What exactly is it? "Vayagidu lo Mordechai es divrei Esther." It was told to Mordechai the things that Esther had said. So it was told to Mordechai. So the Gemara says, "You see, Daniel didn't tell Mordechai himself. Why not? Because Daniel didn't want to bring bad news." So it suggests Rav Henoch, he says, so great, because of this one line, some Gemara someplace in the Gemara Megillah, this guy, the Rav Chanina Bar Abba is not going to go and bring bad news. Why are you going to say, listen, my life is in danger, I got to go tell him that this person is dead, otherwise I'm not going to be responsible. The answer is no, but that's also a mitzvah. And you see that is a mitzvah d'oraisa. So all of the things that we do, all the things that we learn about the proper way, an appropriate way to deal with people, so it's not just, all right, we're supposed to do what's right, but really what I'm supposed to do is mitzvah, some learning, and etc. So no, that's part of the mitzvah, that's part of our responsibility to seek not just to do all of the 613 mitzvahs, but also to recognize the mitzvah, sisa v'hayashar v'atov, doing what is right and good as encompassing our entire life and interactions with other people as well. Alright, stop here.
Thank you.